This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Welcome to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 521, recorded on October 31st, 2017. I'm Martin Spriggs, and you've joined a show about technology and ministry. And you've joined us on, well, what many would call Halloween. We here in Lutheran circles call it a Reformation, and not just any Reformation, Reformation 500. And I've invited two of my closest friends, my podcasting partners, to join me in that celebration, Sally Draper and Jason Schmidt. Hey, you guys.
Hey, Martin.
Good morning, Martin. Happy Reformation 500.
Only comes along every, like, 500 years, I guess, right?
Yeah, right.
We've been waiting a long time for this. I know when we first started planning for this, not on the show, but, you know, in the Synod and in Lutheran circles, it seemed like, you know, this is like 5 or 6 years ago, like, this will never get here. And it is here. 500 years ago, nailing of the 95 Theses, and we're just real thankful that that happened, because it's kind of what this show is about, is spreading the gospel through technology, and that gospel was preserved through the Reformation. God was good.
Well, you guys are looking really sharp today. I have to show off that I am too. It's just that I'm wearing my I'm Not Ashamed of the Gospel t-shirt from artist Jason Jasperson, who's here in New Ulm. So I'm celebrating with my attire as well.
Yeah, have we had Jason on the show before?
I think maybe once, yeah.
We did. Yeah, professor at Minnesota Valley Lutheran, right?
That's correct.
Okay, wonderful. Jason, what do you, you've got the tie on. Not Reformation colors per se, but you've got me at least over on the tie. So good on you. And thanks for joining us. By the way, we should introduce Jason, as if most of our audience probably knows him already. Jason Schmidt from Omaha, Nebraska. Remind me of it, Bennington. Is that the school district you're at?
Yep, that's correct. Just outside of Omaha.
Former Wells teacher and semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. That probably is the lead on the business card. That teacher stuff, that's kind of secondary. You being on the show every other month for us is, I'm sure, the highlight of your career.
Yeah, that's the biggest bullet point on my resume, Martin.
That's right. That opens a lot of doors, I'm sure.
Right.
All right, Sally and Jason, we're here on Reformation 500. What are we talking about? Well, we're going to do a little bit of Reformation 500 celebration kinds of things, but we're also going to continue or conclude, I should say, our month-long focus on video production.
That's right. And with Jason on, we definitely want to shift our gear, our look at video, shift gears a bit to look at video production in schools. And I guess one of the biggest challenges these days is that a lot of schools have gone to Chromebooks. So giving students the capabilities of creating video is a little bit more challenging on a computer that doesn't allow you to install local software. So Jason's here to report firsthand on an evaluation or a pilot program they've been running in his school district. And what software are you using, Jason?
Well, what we're using in our district, we're running an evaluation right now on WeVideo. So anybody who's been running around in Chromebook circles for a little while would have probably heard of this product. It's an online, it's cloud-based video editing software, and essentially what it allows you to do is take all of that same functionality that you had in like an iMovie or Windows Movie Maker or something like that, and moves the whole thing online. So now it allows you to create those videos and to do that video production in a pretty simple and straightforward way. From a Chromebook that doesn't have any local storage or anything like that, because that's one of the big issues. Well, you have two major issues that you need to solve when you're editing video. Number one is storage space, and number two is processing power. And Chromebooks don't really have either one of them. So this is a good solution for kind of that cross-platform cloud-based editing. And as far as I know, anyways, this is the only tool that's out there. Like, there's nobody else has come up with a way to do something like this.
Good stuff. I'm just looking a little at their website, and it says that you have classroom management, so control of the students' accounts and things like that. They show some green screen effects, voice mm-hmm. recording, all kinds of things.
Yeah. It's actually a really powerful platform, you know, and one of those things that is a huge concern with a lot of people is that whole idea of student privacy. You know, how do we keep kids' data safe from those third parties that, you know, as and comply with federal law even. And WeVideo is one of those tools that really does a good job with compartmentalizing everything. And, you know, if it's it's a subscription service, so they're not making money off of ads or anything like that. And their policies are very transparent. And they do, you know, they do a really good job of making sure that they've done their due diligence and that they show you that they comply with all of those regulations. So it's a pretty good service overall, as far as those are concerned.
So we'll come back. I have a couple questions on WeVideo that I'm going to put in storage here for a second. I wanted to talk a little bit about the application of video in the classroom. Describe a little bit about how it's being used. What kind of content is being created? How is it being captured even? Some of those are challenging as well, other than just the video editing on a Chromebook. How do you get video to begin with, and how do you guide a student through that process?
Sure. In our district anyways, we allow students to bring their own equipment in. So kids can bring in, you know, digital cameras or camcorders or anything like that. But honestly, a lot of them are just going to use something like this. You know, they'll just pull out their phone and take their video. And, you know, it's really super simple. WeVideo has an app. They can upload it using that. They can upload it into their Google Drive, or they can plug it in with a USB cable directly into their Chromebook and then upload it from there. So, you know, getting the video and recording footage is a lot easier than it ever used to be. Right. You know, I remember back in the day when I was in, you know, even high school, we didn't have digital cameras yet. So, mm-hmm. you know, just you had to check out the camcorder, and it had the VHS, you know, the big VHS tapes and the things up on your shoulder, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, kids don't have to deal with that anymore. So, you know, getting the video off and into the platform is really piece of cake. You know, we have SD card readers on all of our Chromebooks, and you can pop that out of the camera and pop it into your Chromebook and then upload it there. So, you know, that process has been streamlined a lot.
So what kind of projects then are they using this technology to create?
Sure. A lot of the ways that it's being used right now is kind of in place of those written reports that you used to do.
Sure.
So, so a lot of our kids will, you know, they'll create they call them mockumentaries. So, you know, they'll make a mockumentary on, you know, some thing that's going on in the community that bothers people, or, you know, like one of our groups of kids made something about traffic, you know, and just kind of, you know, there are many possibilities for those kinds of things. You know, do an oral report, and produce it as a video instead of doing it for, you know, in an in-class presentation. So we have some teachers that are doing that. One of my teachers is doing a poetry unit. So kids are composing their own poetry, and then they're doing kind of create a slideshow with pictures, and they'll read their poem and record it and publish it that way. You know, a lot of just kind of fictional kinds of things. I have a stop motion unit that I'm going to be doing with the middle school classroom coming up in December. So, you know, I just any of those kinds of applications that, you would think would be a really great way to have students engaged in content. You know, the creativity and problem solving that goes along with, trying to put together a video. The possibilities are really pretty vast.
And WeVideo is up to the task of putting that stuff together in a you know, kind of a pleasing way, so you can have video clips, so you're not having to record from start to finish and just publishing it like you might do to YouTube, but you are taking clips or B-roll or whatever, and then WeVideo is a strong enough tool that you can kind of weave that together and voice overlays and transitions and all that stuff, right?
Yep, yeah. You can, with WeVideo, I think you can have up to 16 layers. So you can, you know, add transitions, you can add text and scrolling text and, you know, all of those kinds of things. You have special effects that you can add. They've got some stock clips that you can put in. They also have stock music that you can add if you want to have background music, record voiceovers, multiple audio tracks if you want to. You know, it's pretty powerful and pretty robust. I have Camtasia desktop on my computer, and it does almost everything that Camtasia does with the exception of the screen capture, which is what I need Camtasia for. But everything else that I can do with Camtasia, I can do online with WeVideo. And it works really great.
That's awesome. So tell us about this pilot program. What grade levels and are they working individually? Are they working in groups? And how is that all working for the kids?
Well, you know, that's a really great question, Sally, because I honestly don't know yet. our target, what was that?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Our target groups that we're working with are eighth graders. So we've got about a little over 200 eighth graders that we're working with to kind of demonstrate, you know, how does this fit into the curriculum and is this something we want to justify investing in? And the kinds of things that we're going to be doing with that, I don't really know yet because one of my really creative teachers asked for it, and I said, okay, you know, we'll set up this evaluation because we got to take a look at it. And he's like, what do you want to do? And he's like, oh, I don't know yet. I haven't gotten that far. I just know this is something I want to use. And it's like, all right, so, you know, we set up the evaluation. It's not costing us anything other than time to go through and do it. You know, we've got to put together a couple of surveys and doing a little bit of a research project with it just to, you know, see if we can justify and validate that, you know, this is actually, yeah, this is having a positive impact on our kids, and we'll kind of take it from there. So right now, you know, I don't honestly, he's talking about doing a video project for his summative rather than do, our middle school runs on hexters. So it's not a semester, it's not a quarter, it's a hexter. So there are six kind of grading periods throughout the course of the school year, and they're coming up, they do some sort of a final project mm-hmm. at the end of each hexter, and he was just going to give him a test, but he's like, I think I'll do a video project instead. So we'll see how that one goes, and that'll be in a couple of weeks here.
All right, well, sounds like it could be used for collaboration if it was a group project, multiple people can work on the same files and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So the way that it kind of works is you set up a project, which is a bucket, and all of your resources then go into that bucket, and then multiple people can check out those resources from the bucket to work on a single project. So maybe, you know, you have this person is working on this portion of it, and so, you know, they'll take that whatever footage they need for that 5-minute clip, they'll check it out. They work on the things that they got to do, then they finish their video, they export it to the project, and now their clip is done. So it's not fully real-time collaborative like you would see with like a Google document or something like that. But we found that the asynchronous collaboration is actually a lot more powerful and a lot more useful than trying to do things live. You know, if you're going to do a live collaboration, it's a whole lot easier on a video project if you're all in the same room and kind of able to talk through those issues as they come up.
Good. Awesome. I suppose you've looked into pricing. That's all part of your evaluation process. And so tell us a little bit about what kind of pricing at least you are getting, and then also what the free version offers as well. I'm sure that try before you buy listeners are out there. So.
Yeah, so the free version is going to run you obviously nothing, and that will give you up to like 2 minutes of export time per month, and then you get like 200 megabytes of storage. So it's not a ton of space. So, you know, like what you see right here, this is my console with the premium version. So you see our use time, we have 620 hours of export time, 100 gigabytes worth of space that we can store. So that's one of those things, they figure that on a per account basis. So we have 600 accounts that are available to us. So they give us about 600 hours, an hour of export time per account per month. And that resets on a monthly basis. And then what does that turn out to be? About 200 gigs, 20 gigs of storage space per account. And then it's just one big bucket. So I might have one group of kids that needs to export 2 hours worth of video, and they can do that. It just goes on a full total amount basis.
You were saying before it works out to potentially $5 per student, but you also, there was a classroom rate as well. That might be the best scenario for maybe a lot of our classrooms.
Correct. Schools. Yeah. So if you only need like 25 or 30 accounts, you can get a classroom subscription. That's $200 a year. Which, you know, if you're looking at video software, it's maybe a little bit more expensive than purchasing something on your own. But if you're talking about having it available for 25, 30 kids, then that's a pretty reasonable cost, I think, especially, you know, when you consider how inexpensive Chromebooks are. If you get a school subscription, then you get this admin console, and that allows you to manage your membership. You can set up groups. I can go in and pull up some reports and see, you know, how many of my users are using this, how many things are being uploaded. You know, I get all of that information in there as well. And then it's really easy, like setting up, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that. That's okay. But it's pretty easy to set up your groups and add accounts and those kinds of things. You know, the management console is super easy to use. And really gets a, you know, it's a worthwhile tool. I would definitely recommend it if you're looking for something like this. You know, I would certainly endorse it.
There are a few other players, maybe not doing exactly the same thing, but perhaps capable of using on a Chromebook, for instance. One that comes to mind, and we've talked about this just recently on Wells Tech, is Adobe Spark, where you create Spark videos. Have your kids tried that one, Jason?
I had, up until we started this evaluation with WeVideo, I have been recommending Spark for about a year and a half now. As soon as it came out and I heard about it, I was like, wow, this is fantastic. So that's one that a lot of our elementary kids will use rather than something like a WeVideo or something like that. It's just got a lot more thematic kind of features that are built into it. And the big thing too was there's no cost. Mm-hmm. It's cross-platform, and they can log in with their Google accounts. So those criteria are kind of real high on our selection for some of the tools that we use with our elementary kids.
Excellent. It seems like I had one more that I was going to mention. Oh, interesting. As we were planning for the show, we talked about how YouTube is going away from online video editing. But actually, when you take a look at your YouTube account, those capabilities are still there. So we aren't quite sure what's up with YouTube. Maybe they just aren't enhancing it any further. But as of now, you can do video editing there as well. So
very good
capabilities.
There are other tools. We've talked about Animoto and those kinds of aggregation tools. It'll take all kinds of different media and kind of mash it up for you. Some do it all for you. Others are more manual. So a lot of different options out there. But it sounds like if you are in the Chromebook space, that WeVideo is definitely the lead horse and something that you would do well to consider. And it sounds like a reasonable price tag too, especially if you plan on doing an amount of video in your classroom. So, Jason, thanks for sharing your experiences. We'll look forward to the decision there that Bennington makes and see what happens in the future. So,
yep, I'll let you guys know.
Good.
We also should put in a plug for wellstech.wells.net, our show notes website, because Jason shared an example video from WeVideo, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes.
All right, let's move along. Next segment in our show is News in Tech, and some very timely news from for all you World Series lovers.
Yeah, I got an email from YouTube the other day that said, watch the World Series live for free. And I wasn't or haven't experienced tv.youtube.com, so YouTube TV, where they have over 40 channels available for live streaming, and you can try it for free during the time of the World Series, even if the games last till 1 a.m., whatever it takes. They're broadcasting them free, and the cost over time is $35 per month, but they have some big hitters in their lineup of television stations that are free through YouTube TV. So maybe time to cut the cable and check out YouTube TV, among other things. So
yep. Lots of different options out there now. Mm-hmm. And also some news from Amazon, Sally.
Yeah, this one's quite interesting. I don't know. We're making some serious projects process with, let's see if I can get the right P word, progress with technology, because now Amazon delivery drivers can actually unlock customers' doors and deliver the package inside your home. So there's a little bit of technology around it. They're actually wearing like a body cam so you can see what they're doing and what they're seeing at the time that they're in your home. And they only get, I think, 5 minutes of worth of a door code to get in and out to deliver your package, but a lot more secure delivery. Obviously your package is not sitting on the front steps, just inviting someone to stop by and pick it up and take it home with them instead. So interesting that they're piloting this, I think in like 37 cities maybe. And I don't know if Milwaukee's one of those, Martin. Maybe they can come and unlock your door for you.
I guess we talked about this when we did the show planning, and I guess I'd be okay with that. I don't know about Debbie. And Sally, you were a little nervous about this too, weren't you?
Yeah. I think the concept of their Amazon boxes makes me more comfortable. Wow, I can't get my words out. I'm all starstruck by Martin Luther today or something. I don't know what's going on. Right. But yeah, they've got these boxes where they'll deliver to you, and then you can like scan something to get into your box. And that way it's locked up and secure near you. That seems like a better option than them actually unlocking my door and coming in my home. Kind of like that better.
Jason, what about you? You on board with this?
I have a dog.
There must be, yeah, they must have to deal with that somehow. But
well, yeah, I think I because I saw that when they announced it. So one of the things they said is that then this is not for you. So I was like, yeah, I have a dog and a hedgehog. So I think, you know, the guard hedgehog might get a little ruffled.
This is a pet hedgehog, or just somebody that has made your house his home.
No, her name is Cookie. She lives in our basement.
Is that right? Well, I've got a hedgehog that roams around my backyard I'd love to give you.
Oh, really?
Because he eats the flowers, or at least some of the flowers. So.
Oh, no, this one's cute.
we'll have to share hedgehog photos, because I've got a photo of my guy on the back porch.
There's our Cookie.
Oh, that's so cute.
See, yeah, see, there, you know, and then see, she's got her little teeth showing right there. Yeah. So,
all right. Well, we'll see where this goes. I think something has to be done, you know, with package delivery, because this is, you know, in certain areas, a real problem where packages are left on door fronts and they're gone. They're easy targets. So it's something that needs to be dealt with. So this is, again, this is just through Amazon. This is not through UPS, FedEx, or the U.S. Postal Service. This is through their Amazon delivery services. That Dropbox kind of thing, I've seen that now when I order from Amazon where I could have it delivered to one of these fairly close locations, but I've never taken the time to see what that's all about. But that sounds interesting as well. And that that could, at least in some areas, alleviate that problem, too. Let's move on to Wells Now. Couple different things that we've been talking about over the last few weeks. Interactive Faith is our online Bible study offering through the through a live stream service. And the current Interactive Faith series entitled Luther's Lasting Legacy.
Impact, yeah.
Impact. A legacy would have been, impact, I guess, would have been a good alliteration. But Luther's Lasting Impact is in week, I think, 5 now of 6. So you can still join in. They are all independent lessons, so they're not building on the previous one. And Professor Joel Otto from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary is leading those 6 and 8 o'clock Central Time every Wednesday night. So tune in to that. And Sally, how is the Gospel Outreach with Media digital conference going?
Well, that's a happening place. There are so many interesting interviews over at gowm.org. This is an online-only conference, and it's advertised to the world, and so far, I don't know, probably 30 different countries have visited the site and participated in discussions and things around a lot of different topics. There's some special Reformation anniversary presentations, gospel media outreach around the world, and even expanding approaches to gospel outreach with media. And yours truly has a link there with Gospel Outreach Discoveries from Wells Tech. So take a look at all the resources. It's almost overwhelming how much great content is here and how forward-thinking it is to be considering how outreach around the world can happen from our computers here on our little old desktops. So good stuff.
So check it out. It's open for another couple of weeks, I want to say.
Yep. I believe it ends November 13th or something like that.
Okay. Yep. 2 more weeks. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's move on to our picks of the week. And as guest, Jason, you're going to hit lead off. Do you have a pick for us?
Yeah. My pick is the Curiosity Smart Tab for Chrome. It's a plug-in. And let me just give you an example of some of the stuff that shows up. So every time you open up a new tab, after you've added this extension, you get another random fact. So, can you solve this order of operations problem? Yeah, I probably could, but I'd have to go through and kind of work on that. And I just don't want to do that. But every time you open up a new tab, you get something different. It's just fascinating, anything from, environmental issues or things like that, or like the science ones really kind of grabbed my interest. I read something about like a black hole. What if there was a black hole the size of a nickel or something like that? How would that, what would that do? And just fascinating stuff, worthless information. But it just takes you, it links you to a website, this curiosity.com. Really interesting content out there. So just a great little distraction and a black hole to fall into if you're, kind of looking for, maybe a discussion starter for a classroom or, something
brain
that...
exercise.
Yep. Yeah, a little brain exercise, or maybe your goal is I want to learn one new thing every day. So I have not seen any duplicates on any of these tabs. So
some are math, some are science, some are geology. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff there, it looks like.
Yep. Yeah. There's all kinds of really interesting things going on. So curiosity.com smart tab Chrome extension. Definitely worth checking out.
Nice imagery. I mean, it's not an eyesore at all. It looks visually appealing. Free, I'm assuming.
100%, yep.
And Chrome plugin, do you know if it's available on any other, Firefox or anything like that?
That's a really great question.
Cross streams there.
Yeah, I have no idea. Let me look into that.
Okay, good. Thank you, Jason. Sally, pick of the week.
Well, you know, sometimes our Wells Techers point us to things that are worth mentioning. And I guess I need to take my hat off to this guy named Jason Schmidt for pointing me to the Computer Science Teachers Association, CSTA.
Oh. I wonder who they are.
Great stuff, don't they, Jason? And one of the things that I learned about through CSTA is the American Computer Science League, which organizes computer science contests and programming for elementary, junior, and senior high levels. And they actually have a new season starting December 1st. So if you're interested in getting in on some computer science testing through the American Computer Science League, now is the time to get signed up. I think there are fees associated with it. They have some sample questions out there and information about prizes and things. Sounds like a fun competition to be part of as more and more schools look at incorporating computer science into their curriculum. So check that out. In addition, this is perhaps the fifth year that we've mentioned Hour of Code, because they are having their five-year anniversary this year, where they're encouraging different organizations, schools, after-school programs, whatever it may be, as well as individuals to participate in an Hour of Code during the week of December 4th through 10th. So you can sign up to be part of the event, and you can host your own event. They even have a great how-to out there with all kinds of tips and promotional materials and different ways to set up your event and direct the students through the Hour of Code. And perhaps it'll catch on and they'll do way more than an hour of coding after they have that exposure. So time to get registered for both of these great events coming up in December. And we'll have links in the show notes to get you there.
Very good. Thank you, Sally. Mm-hmm. My pick of the week is something that we've referenced on the show a few times in the past. It's been a while since we've done so, so I thought I'd bring it up again, speaking of Hour of Code and all things technical. W3Schools.com, one of my favorite websites, and it's actually become even more so as I've been teaching a class on web page design. They essentially use this as a textbook, so It's a great resource for anybody who wants to teach coding or learn it. And I think the content here is, available or accessible to a lot of different grade levels or experience levels. They have tutorials on HTML, CSS, Bootstrap, which is a CSS framework, graphics, they have JavaScript frameworks. There is all kinds of tutorials on all kinds of different technologies. And all of them are kind of the same structure, where they have kind of a simple walkthrough with explanations, nicely categorized. So for instance, HTML, you'd talk about elements and attributes and headings and paragraphs, styles, etc. But what's kind of neat about it is they have integrated little tutorials or examples. So they have a try it yourself section, about four or five of them in every section, where if you click on that button, they'll show you code and you'll have the ability to play with the code and see the results. So you have two panes. On the left pane or column, you see your code. On the right column, you see the results of what you do with that code, and you have a little run button. So you can kind of go back and forth and play with it, essentially try it yourself. And then many of the areas have at the very bottom, you have exercises, so you can test yourself. The exercises have, let me see if I can find one here for those of you watching at home. Here's an example of an exercise on HTML attributes, where they give you an exercise, add a tooltip to the paragraph below with the text about W3 Schools. So they give you the code on the left, and they give you the result on the right. Then a check your code button and a show the answer. So if you just don't get it, you can get the answer. Also, they can give you a hint of what to what to think about, what particular area to look at, those kinds of things. So these exercises are extremely valuable. They're not graded per se. I mean, you can get kind of a score at the end, but you're not going to maybe use this as a testing tool for if you're going to teach this in class, but it's a great review exercise. Then if you are a developer, they also have not just tutorials, but full references for each of these languages. So HTML, CSS, JavaScript, you have tag references, color references, attribute references, just kind of a go-to place for these coding languages. And these are the languages of the web. So I'd say if you are in that space or interested in just learning more, this would be a great place to start. W3schools.com, totally free website. There is some advertising sprinkled throughout, but it's easy to get past that. It's not going to get in the way of your learning or the learning of your students. It doesn't require a login. Just kind of good, straightforward, simple, very speedy website if you're looking for coding instruction in all kinds of different disciplines, HTML, CSS, whatever it is that you're looking for, mostly web-based technologies. So take a look at W3schools.com.
I'm a fangirl, Martin, and one of the things I like about it is how easy it is to quickly find stuff in there. So I'm stuck and I know that there's a certain attribute, but I can't remember the lesson. So I can search real quickly, either using Google search. And oftentimes, if you put in HTML attributes or whatever, W3Schools is at the top of the list, or you can go to the site, obviously, and search directly there. So really great for reference as well.
Yeah, awesome. And they keep it up to date. So like maybe you're interested in Bootstrap 4, which is a CSS framework that just recently came out, and they have a whole tutorial on it already. So good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Let's move on to our ministry resource of the week. And Sally is up this week. What's your ministry resource, Sally?
Well, believe it or not, it has to do with Reformation 500. We actually had a special visitor in our Bible class at church on Sunday. Martin Luther himself was there, and I got my picture made with him. It was so much fun.
It's a lot like Nate Scharf.
I was just going to say, it's a lot like Nate Scharf.
So, he did this whole Bible class as if he were Martin Luther and answered questions from us and everything as Martin Luther. It was really awesome. And just a tip of the iceberg, great worship all across the Senate. I saw different live streams and links to things that were happening. I attended the one at MLC, and it was just wonderful. It was a heavenly place to be. So I thought it was appropriate just to kind of capture as much as I could wrap my arms around of this good content that we've talked about on Wells Tech, that people have been sharing, all different things. And I guess I would consider this ministry resource a work in progress, because I'm sure there's a lot more that can be added here. But what I've done is put together Reformation Resources Roundup. So there's your alliteration, Martin, that you were looking for. Nice. Got it going on here. Nice. And I have things that are fun and educational, like the bookmarks we talked about last week, or an online flannel graph that works on tablets and smartphones where people can tell the story of the Reformation with little flannel graph type images that you drag and drop onto the screen. Under books, there's a Mighty Fortress Is Our God. I don't know if we've talked about this one, but Jason Jasperson, the artist who had done the shirt I was wearing, he actually illustrated A Mighty Fortress, and it has it out on Amazon as a book for sale. And it's just really stunning imagery that he's done there. Under multimedia, there's just all kinds of different resources available, PDFs for download, online series about Faces of the Reformation. Koine has a brand new CD out called Cross Heart Rose Sky Ring, which represents the different parts of the Lutheran Rose seal. Timetables, interactive online timetables. This one I was really impressed with, where you can actually go through the different periods of the Reformation, and it seems kind of Microsoft Sway-like almost, where it's just a really nice scrolling kind of timeline of the Reformation and different things that happened during that, and more details are clickable and available there. So I also listed, and it has audio in the background even, a whole list of videos. One of our synod districts did a whole series of Reformation talks that they captured on video. There's an article in the Gospel Outreach with Media set of articles that reviews all of the Martin Luther movies from 1953 until today, and it has links to different ones. For instance, that old classic 1953 movie is available to watch on YouTube, so I actually embedded that here. But there's lots more here that you just have to explore, and please do let us know if there are links that I've missed that should be archived here, because I think a year from now, it'll be great to look back on all these Reformation links and have them handy in the ministry resources area of Wells Tech. So that's what I've got for you.
Very nice. Very timely.
Very timely.
Nice. Love the alliteration. All right. We've got a little bit of community feedback, Sally. Something from Casey Dufresne in Watertown.
That's right. Casey wrote to us asking about a vendor, if Wells had a relationship with a vendor for smart boards. And we do indeed. I sent a link to our Shop Wells area where we have information about InfoCore. And you can contact Troy over at InfoCore via email or phone to get pricing and things on smart notebook software, the smart boards, and other offerings that they have using smart technology. So if you're in the market for that, definitely check that out. And then I also received a message from Philip Wells. You might remember that Philip left us a voicemail last week, Martin, and had a lot of great things to say about the topic of video. And I think I'm on the wrong page. Let's see if I can get back to the page I want to be on. And how we can use video in the church. And he sent me a follow-up message and said, Peace Lutheran Church, which is an ELS congregation in North Mankato, Minnesota, is actually posting video on Facebook on a daily basis. It looks like they had 1,500 views on one recently. So they're getting a lot of traction with these Facebook videos that they're doing. And they appear to be really well done. So they've got, put some thought behind it. They've got it out here. You don't have to have a Facebook account to get to their video page. We'll have a link to that in the show notes, and you should check some of these out. You can share them easily on Facebook, and it might be inspiration for you to do something with video in your own congregation. So check it out.
Very nice. I think we're to that point in the show where we have our video of the week.
Speaking of video, believe it or not, we have a video with a Reformation theme. And this video is extra special. It comes from our friends in the Confessional Evangelical Lutheran Conference. I believe that's correct, CELC. Mm-hmm. And they meet once every 3 years. And this past summer, they chose to meet in Germany in honor of the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. So these are Lutherans that we're in fellowship with from around the world that got together. And all of their leaders did something really neat. Let's see if I can silence the audio. They put together this video with 95 theses for the 21st century. So a modern take on the 95 theses. And it's really well done. It's closed captioned. It's got, like I said, leaders from all across these different synods around the world. And they're speaking in their own language, which is really cool. The captioning is in English, so you'll know what they're saying. But just to see those faces and hear their words as they share these 95 theses for the 21st century. So definitely check out the video.
Very good. And it's actually, well, you probably are a little bit late, but we did live stream it as well, too. So everybody could view it at the same time if they so chose. So it's available.
Speaking of live streaming, we will have a link in the show notes in the video section as well to MLC's special Reformation service that they're having with the students tomorrow, and it'll be on live stream November 1st. So I think our show notes will be out in time. If you want to watch that, you can head over to MLC Streams or grab the link on wellstech.wells.net.
Nice. Well, I think this is the perfect way to kind of close out our month of video, having Jason on talking about how that's all working in the classroom, or at least a potential solution. Thank you, Jason, for sharing your insights. As always, we appreciate you coming on the show, taking the time to do that.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Next month, we're going to continue our focus on a particular topic, and one that's extremely timely, and that is one of security. Seems like there's something in the news each and every day almost about some kind of security threat or vulnerability or Wi-Fi hacking or you name it. We're going to talk about security for the month of November, and we're going to lead it off with a very basic discussion, hopefully a very pragmatic or practical discussion on passwords, password management, use of passwords, sharing of passwords, et cetera, et cetera. So you're not going to want to miss that. That is our topic for November. So episode 522, all about passwords. So tune in next week. Thank you for joining us, everybody. And we're so glad you do. We know that you take some time out to tune us in, and we really appreciate that. And invite your friends, family members, whatever. The more, the merrier. Contribute to the show. In any way that you'd like, go to our show notes page and you'll find all the ways to do that there, wellstech.wells.net. And we'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye. Happy Reformation.